Abraham was 99 years old when he was circumcised. 99 years old. And I think maybe you asked me the question, who circumcised Abraham? Did you ask me that?
Yeah, I think I did.
I think you did. Who circumcised Abraham? We don't know. Maybe God showed him how to, maybe God circumcised him and showed Abraham how to do that. We don't know. Let's find out a little bit about it. We Abraham. Ben. Tashim. Watisha. Shana. Bimolo. Basar. Arilato. We on the front of that means what, Roger? That's conjunction. Okay, and what would be the Greek equivalent, Sharon?
Chi.
What page is that on in the Grand Analytical Greek Lexicon? Roger, you happen to know which way? That's page 208. It's 253.
Oh, yeah, I did know that.
208. You don't that. All right. And Abraham. Abraham. Now, what does Abraham mean, Marilyn? The what?
I'm probably saying it wrong, but he's the father of a multitude.
Okay. What else in there, Sharon?
Well, there's an exalted.
He's the exalted father of a multitude. Exalted father of a multitude. Abraham. Ben? Son. Now, this is really weird the way they do this, but this is the way the Jewish people think. If you're 99 years old, you are a son of 99 years. See, I'm a son of 70 years. Okay. I've been a son for 70 years, haven't I? And Marilyn's been a daughter for a certain amount of years. And Roger's been a son for a certain amount of years. And Sharon's been a daughter for a certain amount of years, have you? That's how old you are. So that's what we have here. Just in case. Now, Roger, did you ever catch this before? Now, there it is, a son. This is how he has been a son for 99 years. A son, 90, Tishim, that's 90. That's 9 tens, okay? We Tisha, and then we have the word, see, the front of that word is Tisha, that's 90. Im, that's plural, all right? 90 plural would be 9 plural would be 90. You understand that? That's the way they think. 9 plural would be 90. We are Watisha and 9. 90 and 9. Shana, years. What does Shana mean, Sharon?
A whole cycle of seasons.
A complete cycle of seasons, okay? And then Bihimmalo. Here we have a verb. Being circumcised. All right. That's nifel, infinitive construct, suffix third person masculine singular. Being circumcised him. Now what can we have in our minds about this time? He was being circumcised, wasn't he? You understand that? He was being circumcised. Did God circumcise him? Or did he circumcise himself? He was being circumcised, wasn't he? Being circumcised. Think about that. Being circumcised. It's nephel, infinitive construct, being circumcised. Being circumcised. Him, flesh of his foreskin, and that means his pointed part. The flesh that was pointed on his male member. Okay, the pointed part. The pointed part is taken off. Now, we've got groups today that don't want to have boys circumcised. They say it's mutilating them. Why did God make all men to where they needed to be circumcised? Why did they have to be circumcised? Why did they have to be circumcised? Why did Adam have to be circumcised? Adam why did Adam have a foreskin and all the way down to Adam, and why are we now going to circumcise Abraham?
Because he has that part to take off.
He has that part to take off.
Yeah.
Brother Roger?
Well, there was an introduction of STDs, and this would help eliminate.
Yes.
Cervical cancer, for sure.
Yeah, it would help eliminate cervical cancer. There were sexually transmitted diseases, and men that are not circumcised are more subject to this than others, because it is an area of their body that is it's wet and moist, and when you circumcise a man, then that takes care of that. Now the Jews, if you can you go please pull the plug on the coffee pot? Now I forgot where I was. That coffee pot got me.
You said the Jews?
The Jews today, if you're circumcised, that's not enough. Like, if I was a Gentile and I wanted to become a proselyte, mm-hmm. I would have to be ceremonially circumcised again. I would have to be ceremonially circumcised again.
How did they do that?
Let's take more of it off. Okay? You'd have to be ceremonially circumcised, because being circumcised is not enough. And Brother Roger, when they came into synagogues, how did they check these guys out whether they'd been circumcised or not?
They had to drop their pants.
They had to drop their pants. That's right. They had to drop their pants. So these things we think of today as non-missionable things were very common back then. Now, Abraham was probably circumcised by God. We can't say that for sure, but he was circumcised. He was circumcised in his flesh. Then, from then on, everybody in his household to be in this covenant had to be circumcised, and Abraham evidently. What would they do first before they were circumcised?
The naming ceremony?
Yeah, but what that goes back to modern Hebrew.
Well, is it 8 days later that this took place, and they had to do the sacrifices and that kind of stuff?
They had to do the sacrifice and everything. But what did they do before you were circumcised, which is very, now we know that's very clinically appropriate. They were baptized. Abraham baptized all of his servants before they were circumcised. They had to be clean, didn't they? They had to go to bat mitzvah later on, the batzvah, that is, later on to be before they were circumcised, they were cleansed. Before an animal was offered as a sacrifice, it was washed. It was baptized. Okay? And so that would be a good thing. When a doctor gets ready to operate on you, they just don't start operating on you. They clean that area up, put a bunch of iodine on you, just paint you with iodine and start in, because that's the cleaning thing to do. So that's what Abraham did too. It wasn't so much, but they were actually bathed. They were dipped. And when they were dipped, then they had to dry off, didn't they? All right? They were dipped and they had to dry off. I keep banging that microphone a little bit. So Abraham now, he's 99 years old and he's circumcised. Now let's go to the book of James in the New Testament. The book of James in the New Testament. Book of James, the second chapter. James chapter 2. Verse number 14. What use is it, my brethren, and I'm reading from the New American Standard, if a man says that he has faith, but he has no works, can faith save him? Can your faith actually save you? Where did that come from? Where did your faith come from?
God.
Can faith save a man? Only faith can save a man. But when you're saved, there are some things that happens in your life. If a brother or a sister is without clothing or in need of daily food, now we're talking about in church. These are church members. This isn't somebody walking down the road. These aren't panhandlers and things. These are people in your church. where the principles of the kingdom or the ethics of the kingdom are to prevail. And one of you says to them, go in peace and be warmed and be filled, yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body. What use is it? What use is your faith? What use is your blessing on them? Even so, faith, if it has no works, is what? Dead. Being by itself. Faith. When God saved you, He gets your pocketbook too. Doesn't He? You start giving. God saves you, He gets your pocketbook. Matter of fact, He gets everything that you have. Now, sometimes I've known preachers, and sometimes I've done things myself that were pretty stupid about giving people things that really didn't help them. You have to give with discernment, because sometimes when you're giving something to somebody, these are people besides the church, okay, besides your close church members. When you give them things, sometimes it's a waste. It was a detriment to them instead of help. Sometimes people are just dependent. There were people that came to the church when I pastored a church in east of Bakersfield that were church bums, going from church to church begging. They would go beg, get food, and go sell the food. And go buy drugs with it. Or alcohol. Or something. Their children were still hungry, and they'd bring the little children all along, dirty little faces and ragged clothes and everything else I remember. My own sister. This is a fact. I was over to her house at times when she said, go get your dirtiest clothes on, your worst shoes, and let's go out to Grandma. She'll get you a haircut. She'll buy you new clothes and new shoes. This was a plot to get things. They would have new clothes, and she'd throw them in barrels in the garage, never washed. She wouldn't wash them. She would not wash them. When you give something to somebody like that, is that helping them? No. But someone may say, well, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without the works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that God is one? You do well. The demons also believe and shudder, because they know there's a comeuppance, don't they? They know that there's going to be an end to all of this. Someone may say, well, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without the works, and I'll show you my faith with my works. How can you show your faith to your brothers and sisters? One of the most important ways to show your faith is by faithfulness. Be faithful. Be faithful. Be there. Be there to church. Be there ready. Be there attentive to what's going on. Be there. And then if somebody needs something, ask them. If they look like they're sad or whatever, is there something I can pray for you? Ask, can you pray for them? Can I pray for you? Is that important? Prayers? There are people that email me and call me from all over the world asking me to pray for them. Like I can do better than them. I do anyway. They need somebody to lean on. And then you do that. You do that. I remember here a guy about 6 months ago, a guy called me, or I guess about 7 months ago, a guy called me all the way from Minnesota. He said, can I call you? Can I call you? Can I call you? I know you're really busy, but can I call you and just spend a few minutes? Well, I spent about 45 minutes on the phone with him. He had problems, and he wanted me to pray for him, and I did. And that really, really thrilled him. He said, I know you're as busy as any man could possibly be, but you took time for me and my little problems. When I call my students, wherever they are, in New York, Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Whenever I call them, they are so thrilled because I took time out to call them. And I try to call everyone that I can to encourage them and let them know that I'm a real person and I really have time for them. That I'm accessible. We need to be accessible to our brothers for prayer. They say, can you come by and pray with me? Can you come by and help me clean my house? Can you come by and cook something for me? I know people that, know one person that she had plenty of money, but she was really getting bad shape. And she would send one of her friends to the grocery store, and they would go buy the food, and they'd come to the house, and they'd cook food for themselves and cook food for her. And boy, she was happy. She got to smell her house being filled with the aroma of cooking food, which she could not do anymore. Is that works? Yeah, that's works. Application of them. Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up Isaac his son on the altar? What did God say? No, don't do it. I know that you would do it. Why did he do that? Why did God demand Abraham to do that? Sharon, why did he do it?
I just think because God knew he was going to offer up his son for
yeah.
us.
Yeah, well, it was a type of it.
Yeah, and it was a test, clearly.
Yeah.
A test of faith, you know, because it made no sense. I mean, here's
the it didn't
God.
Make sense.
Finally, here's
the God that he had been serving did not ask you to offer your children, kill them. That was detestable in his sight. But God demanded that. Why did he do it, Brother Roger?
Well, I'm just picking up on what you said, especially since Abraham waited 100 years to get this son.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And now he's going to ask him to kill him. But Abraham believed that if he cut his throat and hurt that boy and watch his lifeblood flow out of him, that God would raise him from the dead. Mm-hmm. Why did he do that? For you and for me. To show us what faith does. To show us what faith does. Faith does things. Faith does things. I remember one time when I was pastoring a little old church, New Hope Missionary Baptist Church, I had one of my teachers and fellow students come up and preach for me, Brother D.S. Madden. Brother D.S. Madden and I had traveled all over Europe and the Middle East together. We were there from December till May, I think it was. All over in dangerous, dangerous conditions together. And that draws you together, doesn't it, Brother Roger? Being in danger with somebody draws you together. You become very close. He became very close to me, and we would go out for lunch a lot of times and just be together. And when I went to school down there, it was real hardship for money, gasoline, time. And I would drive. I'd leave at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to fight that L.A. traffic because I had to drive from east to Bakersfield all the way out 99, go way out there off of Brundage Lane and Fairfax. And I got to drive all the way down there to Bellflower, California. And I'd drive up there in the morning. I had my razor, my toothbrush in there. And I would go in there, and whatever time I got there, and sometimes I would be so tired, I would stop at In-N-Out Burger and get a hamburger and get a Dr. Pepper to try to stay awake. And I'd stick a toothpick in my mouth and I'd slap myself. One day I was so tired I kept slapping myself and I put a toothpick in my mouth and I run that toothpick halfway through my hand when I slapped myself. Trying to stay awake. And I would go down there and sat in front of that school until 7:30 in the morning. I had my alarm clock with me. I woke myself up at 7:30. I'd get up, go in there and brush my teeth, shave my face again, comb my hair, and go in there and either learn or teach or both. Sometimes I'm teaching half the time. Brother Madden went down there and he told the church, he says, I love Brother Phillips because he loves God. You don't know what you got here.
I do. You don't know how faithful he is. I do.
You know what? I was a witness to him. My teacher. Because of that. Not that I'm super duper big faithful follower of God or anything like that. But to him I was. When we were in the Middle East, I had a little house that I had. I got that little house. By my settlement from my back. I got hurt about 1969. I was paralyzed out in oil fields. They demanded we go out and pick up this heavy equipment, and it was a very slippery location, and I had 1,000 pounds picked up, and the guys with me that had picked up slipped. I caught them and 1,000 pounds, which I had picked up before. I could deadlift 1,000 pounds. It was no problem. I was strong, weighed 246.2. Powerful person till that day. It crushed my whole lower back. Crushed it. The oil company, because I worked the rest of that day, even though I was just dying, falling down and everything else, because my nerves were totally crushed in my legs, I have great determination, so I got up. Well, by the time I got home, I went to the doctor, a chiropractor and a doctor that I knew. I went in there, he took x-ray, and he said, Jim, you'll never work again. I don't know how you got here. I honked my horn out in front of his place until he finally answered and come out and look to see who's standing out in front of his office honking the horn. The oil company got out of it because I worked the rest of the day. I wasn't fixed. Then they hired John R. Polskamp as a doctor to evaluate me. He said, there's nothing wrong with him. See, I gave names. This is real. Okay? I went to James' friend. He said, I don't know how that you're not paralyzed yet. I had pneumonia at the time. He said, you need to be operated on right now. I had just gone to where I took that money. I got $1,700 and I bought a house. With it. In East, at that house where I was raised, it was just a shack. At that time, it was a chicken pen moved in there with a little room or two built onto it. But I had to have a place to live. And I couldn't work anymore. I was trying, I'd go out, crawl around, and pick up potatoes and onions in the fields and corn, whatever I could take, and feed my kids. Crawling around because I couldn't walk. I'd crawl around on my hands and knees sometimes. Brother Madden said, you need to sell that house. It holds you back, boy. Brother Bergstrasser told me, he said, get rid of all your tools and everything else and just go down and just walk by faith. Well, I started giving all my tools away. I gave acetylene torches and hoses and everything to Dieter and all kinds of stuff that wouldn't hold me back from serving the Lord. Then I got ready to maybe sell the house that I was in. And I'd built 2 rooms on the front of it by then. Nice place with a big fireplace and everything. It was home. I'd built, driven every nail in it myself. Brother Madden come up here and said, boy, don't sell this house. He said, this is no mansion. This is all you got. Don't sell it. You got plenty of churches around here you can pastor. They just dying to have somebody like you. You don't have to sell this house. I'm going to sell it. Gave cars away. Foolish sometimes. Wasn't not Abraham for our father justified by our works, and he offered up his Isaac, his son, on the altar? You see that faith was working with his works, and as a result of the works, faith was perfected. And the scripture was fulfilled, which says also Abraham believed God, and it was accounted unto him as righteousness, which it was. And he was called the friend of God. You know, I was raised pretty rough. My father got killed when I was 2 years old, just over 2 years old, robbing a liquor store. He was a sufferer of post-traumatic stress disorder from Patton's Army. And my mother got married 2 or 3 times after that, and then she hooked up with this outlaw, Dale Otto Remling. But boy, that was the best thing she ever did for me. He was an outlaw. He's a world-famous criminal. But that man taught me some stuff. He taught me something. He taught me to stand on my own feet and don't ask for nothing. I got a picture of myself up there in Trail Canyon when I was 10 years old in 1957, cowboying. chasing wild Mustangs, and I had been doing that for a long time already. I was 10 years old. I started when I was 7, working like a man. The horse that I was riding in there was a Morgan Stallion that I paid $150 for out of my own pockets that I earned training horses and hunting wild horses. The saddle that he was wearing, I paid $30 for that I paid for out of my wages. The bridle I made. The bed I bought. He sent me to do things that nobody would send a 10-year-old kid or a 7-year-old kid to do. But I just read a book called Moving Out that is absolutely contemporary with me, exactly. It actually goes about 5 years before me. But up there in the White Mountains, I've been all over those White Mountains. You go up there on White Mountain, Mount Barcroft, and there's camps up there called Robert's Ranch and Sanford's Cabin up there. I used to go up there and we cowboyed back in way in the 50s. We rode up there and it's rough country. Mountain lions and wolves and bobcats and wolverines even back then, bears. My dad would send me and he said, go do that. Go get that horses, run them horses through that trap. So he said, go out there. And I might have to ride 10 miles to do it. And I'm up in high country, up in 10, 12,000 feet where you are out of wind and you can drop a horse dead trying to run him. You can drop a horse dead. Just like that. There's two boys. This Merritt was this cowboy, which I believe I knew at the Deep Springs College. He had three sons, Tipton, and Ted, and Tom. Tipton was 10 years old, and Ted was 8. And he got up one morning, and the Bar 99, you know where the Bar 99 ranch is. The Bar 99 had cattle running up there in the Tres Plumas and the upper Cottonwood Creek area, which is a wilderness. One boy's 8, one boy's 10. And their cowboy was up there, and he said, we're going to try to get those cows down tomorrow. And he said, I'll loan you a couple of men. And their mother was standing there, Winona. Somebody, a guy's going to come up from the college or something, I guess. He's talking about that 8 and 10-year-old boy. He's going to send him down there. And so the mother wouldn't worry, couldn't object. He got up before breakfast. Then they never left without breakfast. When I get up in the morning, what I do, Marilyn, when I'm up in the country up there, I cook a fantastic breakfast because that may be all I'm ever going to get all day long. That's the way I did. We ate a big breakfast because that may all we're going to get for 16 hours. Those boys got up before daylight and went down there driving cattle, and they drove them all the way down past Tres Plumas. This is wilderness now. We're going to go from 12,000 feet down to 10,000, 7,000, 8,000 feet, and then we got to come all the way back up and chase wild cattle. These boys. But those boys, same age I was when I started doing that. You know why they did that? Because they were expected to do that. They were trained to do that. We look at 30-year-old kids today, 25-year-old kids that are kids. Back those days, if you're 8 and 10 years old, you expect to be a man and do a man's work. I did. I did a man's work out here on this ranch out here when I was young, before I was 10 years old. The old boy came back a different way. I haven't shown Marilyn these places yet, Crooked Creek and Wyman Creek and Roberts Ranch and the Barcroft up there in the North Fork of Cottonwood Creek, which you look down in there, and you go about 6,000 feet straight down. You go down this, and that's where the Eva Bell mine is, where you can pick up ore on the ground. That's $20 or 20 ounces a ton in gold and platinum and silver in it.
I expect to see that.
You expect to see that one of these days. You're going to see it in the summertime because there's snow up there all year long. Them boys went down there, this 8-year-old and 10-year-old boy, by themselves now, working cattle, wild cattle. And their daddy came home. He wasn't with them. He told them what to do and where to go. They got up there, and the boss off of the Bar 99 ranch, he rode one horse to death already that day. Big, beautiful quarter horse. Those boys never forgot it. When they rode by that quarter horse, they just cried. He'd run that quarter horse and his heart exploded.
chasing cattle, because he hadn't been in the high country. That high country will make a man out of you, or you'll be dead. One or the other. That's where I learned the cowboy, was in that high country. That's where them boys learned the cowboy. The boys started when they was 6 and 7 years old, just like I did. Holloway's. I think they were still there at that ranch. The father had faith in them because he had trained them. The boys did what he said. Well, the boys came up there. They went over Iron Mountain, and they came up Crooked Creek and went up there, and their mother was as scared to death that they were going to starve to death. Those boys were picking elderberries and eating them as they were going by down Crooked Creek. This filling themselves full. She filled them a great big breakfast when they got home because they hadn't had breakfast yet. The father had faith in them. Does God have faith in you? Are you worthy of that faith and that trust? Does God have that trust and faith in you? Do your fellow men have that trust and faith in you, that you can be trusted like that? And the scripture was fulfilled, which says Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. And you see that man is justified by works and not by faith alone, but justified by works where? Where does God leave you? He don't take you to heaven when you get saved. He leaves you in this world. And in the same way was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers? Shit, this woman, what is her occupation, Sharon? She's a lady of the night. She's a prostitute. She's a courtesan. She was probably a high-class courtesan. When these rich people would come in there, they would court her, and she would sing for them and go to bed with them. That's what she did. She would entertain them and then go to bed with them. This is a courtesan. Mary Magdalene was a courtesan. Now, she's a woman of irrepute, so to speak. But now, because of what she did, she's justified. The messengers and sent them out by another way. For just as the body without the spirit is dead, so also faith without works is dead. That's it. You want to know if somebody's saved, then just look at what they do. That'll tell you. What do they do with their life? What have they done? What are they doing? Verse number 25. I'm going to read a little thing I wrote to you here before we go there. God had signed the covenant with Abraham. Now Abraham signs a covenant with God. This covenant is like baptism. This covenant results in physical blessing. The other covenant has eternal and spiritual blessings. This covenant signed by Abraham has spiritual blessings also. But now he receives the Son of Promise after circumcision. After circumcision. Today we are saved and added to the family of God. Then if we follow in scriptural baptism and physical service to God, we have a certain present blessing which also can follow us into eternity. You do things. We are justified by works before our fellow man. We are justified by works. When my dad sent me up there in those woods to go do something, I did it. Exactly like he told me. If I didn't, he whooped me. Now, I think sometimes he whooped me without cause several times. But one thing is he put fear in me that I better do what he says. Not only for that fear, but for my safety in the long run. If I didn't go do what he said to do, I knew I was going to get beat. Really beat. If I did what he said, that was expected of me. What do we do with our lives? What's expected of us? 1725. We Yishmael beno ben Shilosh. Ezra Shana Behim Malo Et Basar Arielato. And Ishmael his son Now we have the word shilosh, that means three, and then we have the word esere, which is 10. 10 and 3 makes what? You have to do arithmetic when you do Hebrew. That's 13. He's 13 years old. And being circumcised. Now, here we have the same construction of the verb. Did Ishmael circumcise himself, Brother Roger? No. To be circumcised is what it says. Him. It is Nifel, infinitive constructs, third person masculine singular suffix. He was circumcised, probably by his father. Was Abraham circumcised by God? Did God take physical form at times? Did God appear to Abraham? Did God appear to Adam? Did God appear to Jacob? Jacob's name became Israel. What does Israel mean? You remember, Roger? Ish is in that. That means man. Man who wrestled with God. Man who wrestled with God. Seder is in there. Israel. The man who wrestled with God and prevailed. Et basar arilato. And Ishmael, his son of 13 years, being circumcised, et basar of his pointed member. That's what it means. The pointing of him in his pointed part that was cut off. So now, Abraham, since Ishmael is his son, he circumcises him, so he is in the covenant. In what way is Ishmael added to the covenant of God? What did God tell Hagar? That 12 princes would come out of Ishmael. But, strong adversative conjunction, what? But, he shall be like a wild donkey. A wild donkey. Not a tame donkey, but a wild donkey. A wild ass or a wild donkey and a tame donkey are two different animals. I'm telling you, people. You go out and wild donkeys. I told you about a story when my dog chased the cows, the bulls, all the way down in the Saline and Eureka Valley, or through Eureka Valley down to the point of the Saline Valley, and we had to go there and drive them back. And my dad always gave me a pistol with one bullet in it. Whatever good that was, I guess he had a lot of confidence and faith in me using that correctly. The only bad thing about it, I'd never shot that gun, that one. I had my rifle, which I still have, that 22 rifle. Boy, I could shoot a bird's head off with that, and I did many times. But that pistol, I never got to shoot it. But I carried it up in the woods. Maybe he thought, maybe I'll get in a real bad pinch, I'll just blow my own brains out. Or whatever. But he said, son, Jimmy, when you get down there, we're going to be among these wild jackasses. And they are mean as sin. He said, they'll climb on that horse and pull you off. Now, I said, if you get in a real tight pinch, you got a bullwhip there, whoop them with that bullwhip, whoop them with your rope, your lariat, do whatever you need to do, scream and holler, kick them. If it gets real bad, pull that pistol out and shoot them. That's confidence, isn't it? I went down in here, they came. I didn't have to shoot one of them, but boy, they came after me. I did all those other things. I popped the bullwhip. I did everything. That horse, when I popped that bullfoot, jumped as far sideways as me in Maryland. She had one eye. She like killed me a couple of times jumping. She jumped 15 feet sideways when something scared her on the blind side. When I popped that whip, boy, I tell you, I had to hang on for dear life. Well, we got past that. Wild donkeys are mean. They'll kill you. And they kill each other. When they're not fighting somebody else, they're fighting each other. And what is the Arab race like today? What are those Islamic people over there? They're killing each other every day. There's not a day go by in the news that they haven't killed somebody or something. Well, now not all of them are from Ishmael. Some of them are from Keturah also. Okay? But that's the way they are. They're like wild donkeys. Now, a tame donkey, you couldn't have anything better. You raise a donkey in captivity, and you got the most faithful animal that you could possibly ever have. You can take that thing out, and if I had a donkey here, and I wanted to go harvest corn down there or something and put on that donkey's back, I could cover him plumb up and just aim him back home and say, "Go home, baby." And she'd go home, and she'd be waiting for me there when I got there. Boy, I've seen them. You've seen them like that in the Middle East. Roger, you've been over there?
No.
Yeah, that's the way they are. They're real good. The best, one of the best animals in this world is a donkey. They are faithful. They will keep you out of trouble. That's why they take those mules down there in the Grand Canyon, because they're sure-footed and dependable and faithful, and you can depend on them. Okay? Depending. Faith. Confidence. The title of this message is Confidence. The confidence that we try to show among our fellow man and to God. Are you worthy of your calling? Are you worthy of it? Are you worthy of the calling? What calling? What calling? What God called you to do? Serpent flies in his flesh of his foreskin. 17:26. Biest sim. Hayom heza memol Abraham Vayishmael beno. This is this word here. It says, in the bone, literally is what it says. In the bone. That's literally what it says. Brother Roger, what do you think about that word? Be et sem. Mm. In the beginning.
Oh, okay.
In the very substance. Bone is what holds you upright. What if you didn't have bones? All that flesh would just fall all over the place, roll around like a jellyfish, wouldn't it? The bone is what holds you together. In the bone of that day, you write that down someplace because that's important. Of the day, Hayom Hazeh, the this, he was circumcised. He had been circumcised, Abram. Look at that. He had been circumcised. Who circumcised Abraham? Did he have Eliezer do it, or did God do it? What happened? How did he get circumcised? He was circumcised. He was circumcised, Abraham. And Ishmael, his son. 17:27. We call Anshi Bito Yelid Bayit You miknoth, kasef, miet, ben, nikar, nimmolu, ito. And all men, all of these men that had this male member, every man. Now, in the Islamic world, we have a real controversy here because they circumcise women, don't they? Did it say that he circumcised women here? No. But that's what they do. They do that. And all men of his house, a child, the issue, technon in Greek. A technon means what, Brother Roger, in Greek? A live birth. And here we have this same word here in Hebrew, is yalid, and it means a live birth, a technically born son of his house, belonging to his house, and of it means the buying of his silver, those that he bought. Those that he bought with silver, that he purchased with silver. From son of here we have This word here later becomes a Gentile. Okay? This means strangeness, a foreigner, strangeness, strangers. Somebody not of your family. Third person construct plural nephel perfect. They all had to be circumcised with him. All of them were got out there. They were all baptized. And now they're all circumcised. Baptism didn't start with John the Baptist. Baptism starts way back in the Old Testament. Every time a woman went through her monthly cycle, she was taken out there by her mother-in-law, and she was baptized 12 times, once for each tribe of Israel, that she would be fertile and that she would have children. They didn't want her to have any more cycles. They wanted her to have babies. They expected that. Israel is very productive when it comes to having kids, aren't they? They have a lot of kids. They have a lot of these kids because they say a child is a gift of God. And if a woman is barren, then God is not happy with her. If a woman's not having kids, something's wrong, they think. So all of these people are circumcised. Let's go to 18 and verse 1, and we'll stop there today. Vayirah Elah Hadavar Be'elone Memri Lihu Yesev Pita, that's a TH sound. Ha Ohel Kehom Nayom Hayom. And look what happened here now. Jehovah Jireh means what? It Lord will provide, but what does it literally mean? The Lord was seen. The Lord was seen. Here we have it again. God is letting this word Jehovah Jireh means the Lord shall provide, but it's the Lord was seen. Jesus said Abraham saw my day and was delighted. Was he not? He saw him. Jesus said, I was over there with Abraham and he saw me and he was delighted. He was delighted because he didn't have to offer his son. And now it says, he appeared unto him and kept on appearing unto him, Elah, Jehovah. Here, and who is Jehovah? This is a pre-incarnate Christ. Be'elone. Be'elone, it means by oaks. By strong and firm trees. Marilyn wants to plant an oak tree in our front yard up there in Fish Lake Valley. Oak trees take a long time to grow. And they are very strong. There's trees up there that are very, very old, just above where we are. I used to gather up driftwood from Lighty Creek and from Cottonwood Creek. I would get driftwood up there, and it was really hard, like it was lead, this wood was. And it was so dense, it was called pitchwood. And I had a wood splitter at that time. Now, you couldn't do anything with this, but I had a wood splitter. You could put a 10-inch piece of wood in and set it sideways, and it would cut it in two. I'd take some of these long drift pieces of driftwood from that bristlecone pines, is what it was. It would float down there and be washed down. I'd take it, and I'd put it sideways in there, and I'd bust it. One time, this wood, they have traced some of those trees back to about 8,000 years old. That's a long time. They counted those rings. They're very small rings. They're just microscopic rings. Some of those trees are 5,000 years old and still alive. You can imagine that. When Abraham was there, this time, those trees were there. The scariest I ever was with a wood stove. Had my little wood stove up there in my house in Fish Lake Valley. And I got a little bit too much of that bristlecone pine wood, and I got some mahogany, mountain mahogany in there, and that stuff is like dynamite. My stove turned red. Then it began to turn white, and it was going foo, 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 foo. I started to see if I could pick that thing up and throw it out the door, except it wouldn't go. I figured the house was going to burn down on top of me. And I thought my stove was going to melt. The stove's made out of cast iron. That's, you can melt steel and just move it around. That cast iron, it's a different kind of construction. It stays there. I started taking the lid off and squirting water in there, trying to slow it down. I mean, it was steaming. Boy, I mean, that stove, the stove pipes were red. Everything outside, I looked there and my stove pipes glowing outside. This is scary. That oak wood will put out more BTUs than anything except bristlecone pine. Oak trees, live oaks especially, live oaks, wood, and black locust put out more BTUs than any other kind of normal wood. Bristlecone pine will surpass that, and so will mountain mahogany surpass that many times. You got to be careful. The woman that Winona Holloway talked about, this guy bringing little pieces of bristlecone pine to her to use in a wood stove up there, and up there above Robert's Ranch, up there by where there's green cabins up there, was the last time I was there, where the Forest Service had up there. She was in one of those cabins with a wood stove, and he brought her some of this. He said, be careful with that. She put it in there, and she thought she was going to burn the house down, just like I did. Woof, 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 woof. These oaks of Mamre. Oaks have always been good wood of Mamre. This means bitterness, Mamre. Oaks of bitterness, and he kept on setting. Masculine senior, cow participle, kept on setting in the door of the tent, in the door of the opening, pita ha'el, of the opening, in heat of the day. Now, those old tents back then, they were sprawling tents made out of goat hair, most of it black goat hair, and out in front they had a flap out there with poles standing on it, and they'd set out there, and they would set, and they'd pull the sides of the tent up. The Indians did the same thing over here. They pulled the sides of those tents up, and the air would blow through there. So he was sitting there in the shade in the heat of the day. And that's just previews of coming attractions, because we're not going to go any further than that. Thank you for your attendance. I hope you learned something from God's Word. Do you have any questions? Yes.
I do. Do the Muslims still circumcise their men?
Do what?
Their boys on the
8th. Oh, yeah. I don't know what day they circumcise them on, but they circumcise them. And, you know, they circumcise the women for a totally different reason.
Oh, yeah,
mutilate them. That's mutilation. All right. So we went from 17:24 through 18:1. Brother Roger, you got any questions? All right, let's have a word of prayer and we'll go to our next class. Our Heavenly Father, we come to you. We pray that this goes out, it'll touch people's hearts. And I used a lot of application today. And not interpretation, but application, how we can show that we have faith in God and that people will know that we're saved. Help us to continue to do that. Forgive us for a failure. In Jesus' name.